Well, friends, would you turn with me, please, to the words that we read together in Genesis chapter 18. Genesis 18. Genesis 18, and we'll read again verse 22. So the men turned from there and went towards Sodom. But Abraham still stood before the Lord. Abraham still stood before the Lord. I had a great friend and mentor. He's now in heaven. And his name was Ronald Morrison. He was a parish minister in Alness for the best part of 20 years before his sudden passing, almost on his doorstep back in 2013. And when I was 17, Ronald would meet up with me every fortnight to discuss life and discuss ministry. When I went to university and then to Free Church College, Ronald would write me on a regular basis. When I returned home for the holidays, Ronald would always arrange to meet up with me. When I was inducted to Thurswell Free Church, Ronald preached at the very first service. And at one point, Ronald encouraged us to study a book on prayer by a Norwegian pastor named Ole Hallesby. And here's what Hallesby says about prayer. To pray is nothing more than to let Jesus into our needs. To pray is to give Jesus permission to employ his powers in the alleviation of our distress. To pray is to let Jesus glorify his name in the midst of our needs. The results of prayer are not dependent upon the power of the one who prays. Our intense will, our fervent emotions, or our clear comprehension of what we are praying for are not the reasons why our prayers will be heard and answered. Nay, God be praised, the results of prayer are not dependent upon these things. To pray is nothing more involved than to open the door, giving Jesus access to our needs and permitting him to exercise his own power in dealing with them. Wonderful definition of prayer. This morning we're beginning a new 8-part series on people who prayed. And this morning we're going to be looking at Abraham's prayer for Sodom. We'll divide the passage under two headings, the decision and then the discussion. The decision and the discussion. First we have the decision, and you see that in verses 16 to 22, where the author focuses on the Lord's decision to go down to Sodom. In verse 16 we see the rising. We can begin by noting what has taken place in verses 1 to 15. The Lord, along with two men, has gone to Abram at the Oaks of Mamre. Abram has treated them as honored guests and hastily prepared a meal for them. And the Lord has then promised Abram that he will return within a year, and that within that year, Abram's elderly wife Sarah will have a son. We now see what takes place following on from this. Look at verse 16. We read that the men rose, or set out from there, and we're told that they looked towards Sodom, the city where Abram's nephew Lot had chosen to reside back in Genesis 13. And we're told that Abram went with them and sent them on their way. Abram quite literally walks with God. We move from the rising to the resolution in verse 17 to 19. We hear the rhetorical question. Look at verse 17. The Lord speaks. It's unclear if he is speaking to himself or to those who are with him. And he asks the question, shall I hide from Abram what I'm about to do? Now, it's a rhetorical question, since the Lord has already resolved that he is going to reveal to Abram what he's about to do. And we hear the Lord's reason for doing so in verse 18 and 19. The Lord is going to reveal to Abram what he's about to do, since Abram is going to become a great and mighty nation, and all the families of the earth will be blessed in him. Furthermore, the Lord is going to reveal to Abram what he's about to do, since he has chosen Abram. He has known Abram, and he has chosen Abram so that Abram might command his children and household to keep the way of the Lord. And if they keep the way of the Lord will do to them what he had promised. He will bless them. The Lord is resolved to allow Abram to be privy to advance information about what he's going to do.
because he holds Abram in high regard, and not only because he holds Abram in high regard, but also because he has a high calling for Abram and Abram's family. We move from the resolution to the revelation in verse 20 and 21. The Lord tells Abram about information that he has received. Look at verse 20. A great outcry against the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah has reached him. The Lord is in receipt of a legal complaint against Sodom and Gomorrah. And the outcry is great, come, because the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah, we read, is grave, it is grievous, it is very heavy. Now that should come as no surprise to any reader of the book of Genesis, because all the way back in Genesis 13, the author told us that the men of Sodom were wicked and were great sinners before the Lord. The Lord goes on to tell Abram about the investigation that he is about to conduct, verse 21. He is going to go down to Sodom and Gomorrah, and he will see whether they have done according to the outcry that has come to him. And if not, if they have not done all the wickedness that has been reported to the Lord, if Sodom and Gomorrah are not as bad as has been made out and reported, the Lord says he will know. Now, the Lord knows all things, but he's revealing to Abram that he is about to conduct a careful, thorough investigation into these cities before he carries out any further action. We move from that revelation to the reaction in verse 22. Let's recap what's just happened. The Lord's spoken to Abram and given him information that no one else knew anything about. And he's told Abram that he is in receipt of a legal complaint about the wickedness of the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. And he has told Abram that it's his intention to carry out a careful investigation into their conduct before he takes any further action. Look at what now happens. Verse 22. The two men who are with Abram and the Lord turn away, and they begin to march solemnly, steadily towards Sodom. Meanwhile, Abram still stands before the Lord. It's a significant moment. Abram stands ready to make a desperate appeal to the Lord on behalf of these wicked cities. Abram takes up the position of spokesman, mediator, intercessor, advocate for these wicked cities that the Lord is about to pronounce judgment on. Now, friends, as we consider these verses, we're being shown the invitation to God's servant. The invitation to God's servant. That's what we see here in Genesis 18. Here's the Lord, and he's telling Abram about what he has heard and what he's going to do. And here's Abram responding by choosing to stand before the Lord. Listen to how Dale Ralph Davis explains what's taking place. He writes, "It seems to me that the statements of verses 20 and 21 have glue all over them. These verses don't merely communicate information, but act as an invitation. It's as if God is saying to Abram, 'Now please talk to me about this situation.' And Abram does. He went on standing before the Lord." And that's important for us to reflect on. The Lord invites his people. He draws his people. He prompts his people. He nudges his people to pray, to speak to him. Do you ever stop to think about that? Again, Dale Ralph Davis illustrates this with the story of the evangelist Duncan Campbell and Mary Morrison, who was from Lewis. It was 1957, and Duncan Campbell was on a preaching tour in South Africa. And on one particular afternoon, Mary Morrison, who was back in Lewis, felt a compulsion, an urge to pray for Duncan Campbell. And she went away and she prayed for him, and then she wrote to him asking if there was anything particularly wrong and noting the day and the time. Well, it turned out at the exact moment that Mary Morrison had felt that compulsion to pray, that urge to pray, that Duncan Campbell had been preaching in Pretoria. And while he was preaching in Pretoria, he had had a severe hemorrhage that resulted in being rushed to hospital. Now, Mary Morrison, back in Lewis, was 6,000 miles away. And yet the Lord moved her to pray for Duncan Campbell at just the right moment. And the Lord still invites his people to pray, draws his people to pray, prompts his people to pray, nudges his people to pray. Maybe it's those moments when you suddenly wake up at night. I get it a lot, and you've been dreaming about someone. Or they're just on your mind, they're on your heart. It's a prompt to pray. Or maybe it's those moments when a friend calls round and they tell you about some difficulty, some dilemma that they're going through. It's a prompt to pray. Or maybe it's those moments when you hear about the gospel work going on in other parts of the world. You hear about the work of the Faith Mission. You hear about the work of EMF. You hear about the work of Steadfast Global. You hear the work about the Slavic Gospel Association. You hear about the work of Platform 67 or Asia Link. It's a prompt to pray. Or maybe it's those moments when you're just watching the news and you hear about some trouble, maybe local or national or international. It's a prompt to pray. You hear about the vandalism. You hear about the teenagers who are up to all sorts in this town. And it's so easy to say, I'll complain on Facebook about this, or I'll complain to other people about this. My friend, it is a prompt to pray. The Lord has many ways. He has many means of inviting, drawing, prompting, nudging his people to pray. And so this morning I want to ask the question, friend, how are you responding to the Lord's promptings? Are they bringing you, like Abram, to the place of prayer? Are they bringing you, like Abram, to the place of saying, I will stand before the Lord, and I will intercede, and I will mediate, and I will try to advocate? Well, that's the decision. And this brings us second to the discussion. Look at verse 23 to 33, where the author now focuses on the Lord's discussion with Abram about Sodom. Verses 23 to 26, we hear the strong plea. We hear the request that Abram makes. Look at verses 23 to 25. Abram has been standing before the Lord, but look at what he does now. He draws near to the Lord and he asks, will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? And he then raises the hypothetical situation of 50 righteous people somehow being found in Sodom. And he asks if the Lord will sweep away the city or spare it for the sake of these 50 righteous people. Now that word spare is interesting. It can mean to show favor to someone. Or it can mean to forgive someone. It's most likely that Abram has both meanings of the word in mind. He is asking if the Lord will forgive Sodom and show favor to Sodom if just 50 righteous people are found in that wicked city. And he then says that it's impossible to comprehend the Lord sweeping away the righteous with the wicked, the righteous sharing in the fate of the wicked. And he closes by asking, shall not the judge of the earth do what is just? Abram affirms the fact that the Lord is ruling. He is the judge of all the earth. And he affirms the fact that the Lord is righteous. He will do what is just or right. And having heard Abram's request, we hear the Lord's response. Look at verse 26. The Lord speaks to Abram, and he assures him that he will spare the whole city. He'll forgive Sodom, show favor to Sodom if just 50 righteous people are found. It's a stunning response to Abram's strong plea. We move from the strong plea to the successive proposals in verses 27 to 32. Look at the first proposal, verse 27 and 28. Abram acknowledges that he is dust and ashes. He is nothing. He is a nobody compared with the Lord. And he asks if the Lord will destroy the city if 5 less than 50 righteous people are found. And the Lord assures him he will not destroy the city if he finds 45 righteous people. We see the second proposal. Look at verse 29. Having heard the Lord's answer, Abram asks if the Lord will destroy the city if 40 righteous people are found. And again, the Lord assures him that he will not destroy the city if 40 righteous people can be found in it. We see the third proposal. Look at verse 30. Abram grows bolder, but at the same time, he asks the Lord not to be angry with him. And he now asks if the Lord will not destroy the city if 30 righteous people are found. Do you see how he jumps from going down in fives to now going down in tens? And the Lord assures him that he will not destroy the city if he finds 30 righteous people. We see the fourth proposal. Look at verse 31. Abram grows bolder still. And he jumps down from 30 to 20. And he says, Lord, if 20 righteous people will be found in Sodom, will you spare it? And the Lord assures him that he will spare Sodom if he finds 20 righteous people. And then we see the fifth and final proposal. Look at verse 32. Abram asks the Lord not to be angry with him. He wants to speak just once more. And he asks the Lord if he will destroy the city or spare the city if he finds 10 righteous people in it. And the Lord assures him that he will not destroy the city if he finds 10 righteous people. Well, we move from these successive proposals to the solemn parting in verse 33. We're told that the Lord went his way. He has finished speaking with Abram, and he now makes his way to Sodom as he had planned, as he had said he would do. And we're told that Abram returned to his place. He's finished speaking with the Lord, and he now goes back to the oaks of Mamre at Hebron. There is nothing more that Abram can do for Sodom. There is nothing more that Abram can say for Sodom. All he's been able to say is, Lord, will you spare the city if 10 righteous people can be found in it? And he now leaves the matter with the Lord. And so, friends, as we consider these verses, we are being shown not just the invitation to God's servant, but also the conviction of God's servant. The conviction of God's servant. That's what we see here in Genesis 18. Here is Abram. And he's asking if the Lord will really sweep away the righteous with the wicked. It's unthinkable to him that the Lord would do such a thing. And it's unthinkable to Abram that the Lord would do such a thing because he believes the Lord to be the judge of all the earth who does what is just. Abram's a man who is convicted by the fact that the Lord is ruling and he is righteous. And that he can never be charged with any wrongdoing. And that's again important for us to reflect on. You know, friends, we take this for granted, but if you were to look at the ancient Near Eastern religious literature that was being written at the time, it would show you how weak, how capricious the gods of the surrounding Canaanite culture actually were. They were gods that had been made, designed, devised by the fallen human creatures who worship them. And so they were very weak, morally weak and physically weak. There was no belief held out that any of the gods of Canaan ruled over all things and ruled in a righteous manner. The God of Abram, the God of the Old Testament, the God of the Bible is so different. He is the judge of all the earth who does what is just. Listen again to what Dale Ralph Davis says. Abram doesn't have all the answers, but you can see the pillow that he rests upon. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? That is Abram's anchor. Not that Abram or you will not face mystery, but there is always this fundamental clarity, this bedrock that at the heart of things stand righteousness and mercy. You can rest a pile of mysteries and dilemmas and even heartbreaks on the words, "Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is just?" Well, friends, the Lord is ruling, and he is righteous. And that is the conviction that every one of his people can rest on and be comforted by. This was brought home to me following a conversation with one of our members just a few weeks ago. I won't say the person's name, but this person had just had their rug ripped out from under their feet. Their whole life had been turned upside down by a providence that had come their way. And they kept on telling me in our conversation that the one thing that they were holding on to was the fact that the Lord is in control and he is good. That he does all things well. Now, this person didn't have all the answers. And they still don't have all the answers. But they were convinced of the truth and comforted by the truth that the Lord is ruling and the Lord is righteous. So let me ask you this morning, friend, do you have this conviction? Do you know this comfort? Where you can say, the Lord is the judge of all the earth. And he does what is just. He does what is right. No matter what might be happening in your own life or what might be happening in the lives of those you love about and care about most in all the world, are you convinced of the truth, comforted by the truth that the Lord is ruling and that he is righteous? But as we consider these verses, we're not just shown the invitation to God's servant, and not just shown the conviction of God's servant, we're also shown, aren't we, the burden of God's servant. The burden of God's servant. That's what we see here in Genesis 18. Here's Abram, and he is pleading with the Lord to spare Sodom. Look at it, friends. He is not simply praying that the Lord will preserve his nephew Lot. And he's not just praying that the Lord will spare 50 righteous people if he can find them. He's saying, Lord, will you spare the whole city of Sodom? Not just my nephew, not just the righteous, but spare the whole city. Ligon Duncan writes this: Abram had that burden for the people of Sodom. People with whom Abram had nothing in common, and only the love of God in his heart could have brought about that burden. And again, that's important for us to reflect on. The Bible teaches, friends, that God takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked, not even a place like Sodom. And we see that on clearest display in the life of Jesus, God in human flesh. Do you remember in Luke chapter 18, the people of Jerusalem have rejected Jesus. They have rejected his words. They have rejected his works. They have rejected his entire person. And what does Jesus say? Does he rub his hands and say, well, I'm going to call down fire and brimstone on those miserable wretches? No. Jesus weeps over that rebellious city. And he cries out, Jerusalem, would that you, even you, had known on this day the things that make for peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. For the days will come upon you when your enemies will set up a barricade around you and surround you and hem you in on every side and tear you down to the ground, you and your children within you, and they will not leave one stone upon another in you, because you did not know the time of your visitation. Very solemn words, very severe words, but words that were uttered, words that were cried with sobs. Jesus had a burden. Jesus had a tearful concern
for people who were facing the prospect of judgment and condemnation because of their sin, because of their unbelief. And we see something of this burden, this tearful concern in the lives of Jesus' people. People like Robert Murray McShane. Robert Murray McShane was the young pastor of St. Peter's Church in Dundee before he died at the age of 29. We often think Robert Murray McShane, old man. No, he was gone by 29. And that's why I say to those of you in your 20s, your 30s, don't think that you're going to start doing things for the Lord when you're in your 40s or 50s. We're not guaranteed that time. And on one occasion, this young 20-something-year-old man said this: "As I was walking in the fields, the thought came over me with almost overwhelming power that every one of my parish, every person in Dundee, must soon be in heaven or hell. Oh, how I wish that I had a tongue like thunder, that I might make all hear, or that I had a frame like iron, that I might visit every one and say to him or her, escape for thy life." Huge burden. And so as we close, I want to ask the question, friends, do we have such a burden? Do we have such a burden for the people whom we live with? The people whom we work with? The people we see in the supermarket? The people we meet on the ferry, at the football, or even at the funk? Do we have such a burden for the people with whom we may share many things in common, as well as the people with whom we may have absolutely nothing in common? Friends, do we have a prayerful burden that they would be saved? That they would be spared from the prospect of God's final condemnation that the events at Sodom and Gomorrah only previewed and prophesied and predicted? Do we share the heart, not just of Abraham, but of Jesus himself, where we would say to the Lord, forgive them, show favor to them, spare them, if it be your will. Let's close by singing to his praise the words of the hymn.